We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hey again, everyone. Welcome back for some bonus Perpetual Chess content. We are happy to report that two familiar voices to chess and U.S. chess and Perpetual Chess fans are joining us live from London. I am Eric Rosen, who is there taking pictures and doing the Twitter takeover for U.S. chess, and Kostya Kovutsky, who's there as a fan and also doing some great write-ups for U.S. chess. So guys, thanks so much for joining us straight from the source of this incredible historic chess event.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. It's an honor to be back.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. It's good to see you again.
This is, you guys, I know you're practiced at sharing the mic because you guys do those great recaps when you've traveled together and done tournaments. But I've only done one or two like dual interviews, so we'll have to feel our way through this. But I'm sure you guys, being in the same room, can do some verbal cues.
Sure. I also want to congratulate Kostya. I think he's broken the record for the most appearances on Perpetual Chess. Right?
Well, he's tied with Greg, I guess, because Greg did a mini episode on the Pro Chess League, so kind of similar to this. But obviously, we want Greg to be defeated, so we're gonna have to do what we can to make that happen.
So it's like 2.5. Okay, fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this is only the beginning, so. So we'll see what we can do. But okay, so let's get into the World Championship. I mean, this is a special edition basically for the commuters and the diehards that are going to listen right away. Obviously, it will still have value later, but like earlier today, I released an interview with Pontus Carlsen, and I intentionally didn't try to make too many predictions or do too much deep analysis of the tournament because it's a moment in time right now. But what I want for this interview is to capture that moment in time. I mean, we had an incredible game 8 yesterday where Fabiano had probably his best chance of the tournament. So what was it like being in the room for that, guys?
Oh, actually, that's a great question, because that was basically when I walked into the press room for the first time. And so Eric was there, and then Mike Klein and all the other reporters. And so, yeah, he just told me immediately, like, Fabiano has this move c5. The Norwegian computer says it's crushing. And then we were just, like, waiting for 30 minutes to see if he would play it. And everyone was just, like, discussing, like, if he's going to find it, how easy is it to play it, like, what is he calculating, and all this stuff. So that was very tense. And then he finally played it, and we were like, yes, like, now we got a real game.
I mean, yeah, I think we both thought, along with most everyone else in the venue, that Fabiano was going to score the first victory. And, I mean, it's easy to think that when you're checking every single line with the engine. But, of course, when there's so much on the line, so much pressure, sometimes you forget how difficult it can actually be to play these types of positions precisely. And it was unfortunate that we saw, the eighth draw in a row.
Yeah.
After, I mean, what could have been the first decisive game of the match.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because of the way it happened. But I don't. The more draws we get, initially I was sort of like a lot of the chess fans, especially the more casual ones, a little frustrated with sort of some tepid draws, especially towards the early middle of the match. But now it's like the suspense is mounting and mounting, so I don't even mind anymore, because as the playoff looms, to me, like, that would just be the height of suspense. So at this point, it doesn't bother me. But yeah, yesterday was quite a missed opportunity, and I had a similar reaction. I also just tuned in at that moment, didn't even get a chance to turn on a broadcast, but I could see just from the regular computer, not even SES or however you pronounce that Norwegian computer's names, super analysis, I could see that C5 was a significantly stronger move. And then the chat on Chess24 started going crazy when he played it. And then a couple moves later, it was sort of like the balloon went out of the air went out of the balloon when Fabiano played H3.
Yeah, that was a tough moment. Because, okay, again, the engine just like immediately shows like why H3 is like losing white's advantage there. But it's totally understandable during a game, because it's not like he knew the evaluation in the position and played H3. He had no idea like if he's actually winning or if it's just like very promising. So in many cases, you should play a prophylactic move just to keep your advantage. It's just that here, dynamically, it was like one tempo too short. What was interesting, though, like in the press conference, like, he actually had no idea that this was where he lost the advantage, at least not until, like, Daniel King kind of asked him about the move, and then he kind of figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think something's different about this World Championship vis-a-vis how people are using engines. I mean, even 2 years ago, I don't know if you guys feel this way too, but I don't remember just the sort of instant Monday morning quarterbacking to this degree every time an opportunity is missed. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has access to the engines for an event like this, and especially with Ceci, like this moment when Fabiano misses the maiden 30. You're seeing all these comments online, like, how could you be playing for a world championship right. match and miss forced mate? And I think
it was Greg, like, you know, basically trolling the right. people in the chat room. But
of course, there was some sarcasm. But I think there's a lot of maybe chess amateurs out there who don't maybe understand the depth of what the computer is recommending, and to have these positions in a practical scenario, it's not easy to consistently play as accurately as possible.
Also, I think the thing is that, like, in this match, both players have basically had, like, one real winning chance each mm-hmm. in 8 games, which is a lot more than I think the 2016 match had. In that match, like, Carlsen was missing chances, like, almost every other game.
Yeah, a lot fewer, to be clear.
Yeah, it's kind of just like the scarcity of chances. So it's like, well, now he has a chance. It feels like a shot on goal, and like they're missing it. But it's kind of unfair. I think it's just because of how few opportunities they've had that we feel like, well, once they get a chance, they should like definitely knock it in.
Yeah, and it's also fairly brief windows compared to, like, often when you have a winning position, I mean, it's like you might be +1.5 for 10 moves and just like mess it up eventually, but you had multiple chances to bring it home. Whereas here, it's really just been like, you know, a few lines, a few specific moves in circumstances. With Magnus, it was like approaching the 40th move. So, I mean, not that he wasn't the shortest one on time, but still, that makes it even a slightly more of a challenge, because I think there was some psychology involved of nursing his advantage until the 40th move and, you know, taking it home from there. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's unusual in the how slim the margins have been.
Right. I do want to note that Vishy Anand had a really good quote the other day. He was saying the longer the match goes, the more likely that it will be that one mistake will determine the match. And I think after eight draws so far, he's pretty much right that it could just come down to basically one moment of player blundering or missing a crushing opportunity.
Yeah, and if Fabiano is to end up not winning the match, I mean, definitely he'll look back at this game, I would think, just as Magnus, you know, he missed such an opportunity on the first game. But this one being so much later in the match, especially if things don't work out from here, he'll be looking at this game, or maybe it'll be too painful to look at that game from yesterday. Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask you guys about, so we finally got an open Sicilian yesterday, much to the delight of chess fans everywhere, and I'm in that boat. I have nothing against the Ross and Lima, but the positions just weren't really to my taste. And Fabiano's, I mean, it seems like his team is doing some really good prep. I mean, he's generally doing well in the opening, and yesterday he did quite well. So what do you guys think? Is Magnus going to trot it back out there? Or now that he's been playing the Sicilian, and now that he finally got an open Sicilian and got put on his back foot a little bit, do you guys think he'll stick with it?
That's a good question. I mean, it's hard to predict. And I mean, Magnus is the type of player who likes to mix up his openings quite often. So it's been kind of a mini surprise that he's been playing Sicilian every game, because he's very capable of playing e4, e5 on the first move. I would imagine that, like, before the match, Fabiano was studying e4, e5 for white very heavily. So if that happens in one of the earlier games, I would expect Fabiano to have some preparation in store. But from a spectator perspective and a fan perspective, I mean, it's been great to see so many Sicilians. There's been a lot of interesting opening ideas from the very beginning. It seems like every game that Fabiano is white so far, it's at the very least an interesting opening battle.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it feels unlikely that Magnus will switch away from c5. So one, like Eric said, like, Caruana will be prepared for the Berlin, without a doubt, with some dangerous idea, too. So it's not like he's going to be avoiding the preparation. And so far, it just seems like, you know, in the previous matches, he always played something weird in game one and then stuck to his main repertoire. But here, he's just started with the knight c6 Sicilian and kind of just stuck to it. So I think they'll probably just, like, revise the line for the next game and then just come ready for any other, like, potential surprises in the Svechnikov now that they know, like, Caruana's willing to go there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I guess that G5 move that Anish Giri highlighted is where he really went wrong, so maybe we'll see them repeat it. But I don't know, Kostya, I have to respectfully, I mean, I don't know if I'd say disagree. I just think we might see him trot out, like, attempted Marshall or anti-Marshall, as he did versus Karjakin, because I feel like, you know, yes, Fabi will be booked up, and his prep has been amazing, but, like, Magnus, much more so than the Svechnikov, like, he can play that in his sleep. I mean, he's got so many games under his belt that it could have been that the Sicilian was trotted out as a surprise weapon, and he was just going to keep trotting it out until, like, Fabi showed him something. And now that he did, maybe he'll switch. We'll see. I mean, we'll know soon enough. And, of course, we have a white game before that. But, I mean, the white games, Magnus's white games, I fear personally that they're going to get less interesting, because I do think that as we get closer to the playoff, Magnus, being that he perceives an edge in the playoff, I think he's sort of disincentivized to take chances.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was saying something in the press conference about how he's not, like, he's not consciously going for the tiebreaks. And I think we have to take him at his word there, because he does feel like he's the stronger player in all formats. So if he can win a game and avoid the tiebreak altogether, I'm sure he would, you know, very much be willing to take that chance.
Yeah, for sure. It seems like he's just, like, when he didn't play B5 in the last white, and apologize to people who, you know, don't have the positions at the tip of their fingers, but But I mean, you can look it up, and you know, I think a lot of people will, to be honest. But when he didn't play that pawn break and stuff like that, I mean, it just seems like there's this edge lacking that in an open tournament or even an invitational, he would just, he would always go for it. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, he had this quote in the press conference that he I think it was referring to one of these moments in the Queen's Gambit Decline game where he's playing too soft.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's understandable given the match format. I mean, you don't want to take risks when it's not necessary, especially if he thinks he's favored in a playoff. And I mean, it's probably to his benefit to draw the rest of the games.
Yeah.
I mean,
go ahead, Coaster.
Sorry, it might just be like, I mean, a stylistic thing as well. Is like the narrative is usually that, like, in very dynamic positions, Caruana is not worse than Magnus because he can basically outcalculate him in certain positions. But in more like drier technical positions, this is where Carlsen like usually gets his edge. So he might just be, you know, psychologically steering himself in that direction in general, and thus in many cases, yeah, playing too soft and this kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's pivot away from the games because we'll know soon enough. They'll be back at it tomorrow. So tell us a little more about, in order to pivot, I'll ask a question from Jay Stallings, who you guys both know. Jay asks, what is the overall feeling of the chess fan base in London? Are the majority pulling for one candidate or the other? Are fans banding together based on their favorite candidate? Is one side more vocal than the other?
Well, I can say based on Twitter that there's a lot more Magnus Carlsen fans whenever I'm doing a poll or just seeing who's trending towards Magnus or Fabiano. It seems like a lot more people are rooting for Magnus, probably just because of the whole chess culture in Norway. But the venue itself, I think, it seems more that the fans are just rooting for exciting chess and they want to see blood.
Yeah.
There's been a mix of Fabiano fans and Magnus fans. I mean, there's met a lot of people who've traveled from the U.S. to watch this. A lot of people from Norway, too. So seems like a pretty good mix. And I don't think there's been anything like too crazy in terms of like huge fan bases or cheering sections or whatever. It's not like a typical sporting venue when you get the hardcore fans cheering for one side.
Sorry, go ahead.
I've definitely been in like a Team Fabi bubble online.
Yeah,
it's like 80% is for Caruana.
Yeah, I mean, being that you guys are representing U.S. Chess, and Eric's doing the Twitter takeover for U.S. Chess, in addition to taking some great pictures, and Bobby and Kostya's taking over the write-ups for U.S. Chess. I was going to ask, did a cheer go out at least when Fabiano played d4 and it was an open Sicilian yesterday?
Well, I was in the playing room when it happened because it was the first 5 minutes of the round when we were taking photos. And I was emotional inside. I was just so excited to finally see an open Sicilian, and I was a lot more focused on just getting the reactions from both players when d4 was played. From what I can say, I mean, I wasn't seeing too much of the fan reactions. I was just seeing the photographer reactions, and being in the playing room for the first 5 minutes, it's just constant shutter noise of cameras going off. So I think a lot of the journalists and photographers there were also excited to finally see an open Sicilian.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Eric, could you tell us a little bit? I think I saw David Latta on Twitter saying that it's rather crowded for the photographers. So what's it like in there jostling, trying to capture these moments?
Oh, you just broke up there.
Okay.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah. So I just mentioned that David Latta was saying on Twitter that there's barely room for the photographers with all the photographers that are there. So I was just wondering what it's like trying to capture the moment. Like, are you able to like carve out enough space to try to get capture the right picture?
Oh, sure. The space is very tight. There's a roped off section where the photographers can stand, but it fills up by the time the first move is played, and there's about, say, 20 to 30 people in a very tight space. So the trick has been to get there as early as possible. The line for the players, or for the photographers and videographers, usually starts about 30 to 40 minutes before the round. So I usually try and get there as early as possible, so at least I can get a good spot. And it is a challenge to get angles of both of the players, because you kind of have to pick one side of, like, which player you're facing, and you can't really get too close to the center. So every day I try and get a side of a different player, and I've been using different lenses too to try and get a variety of shots, so the photos aren't just too repetitive.
I mean, I've been really impressed with everything I've seen. I mean, you're doing a great job capturing the tenseness. I mean, so many emotions. I mean, Magnus, even more so than other matches, I feel like he's really wearing his emotions on his sleeves in the course of the matches.
Oh, for sure. He's been one of my favorite players to photograph. I think he's on the same realm of Kasparov, just showing a different expression like every few seconds.
Yeah.
Especially in the press conferences too. Those have been some of my favorite shots when he's reacting to some of these questions from the journalists.
Yeah. And Kostya, have you been hanging out mostly in the press room, or are you mingling sort of with the general fans?
So I visited for the last two rounds, games 7 and 8. I basically spent actually very little time in the press room. I mostly just wanted to see what it's like to see the players in the spectator room, and then watch some of like the official commentary and just kind of hang out around the venue.
And what's it like? I mean, I've seen some complaints online and some compliments. What's your overall impression of how FIDE / Aegon did organizing this?
So overall, I think the venue is actually really nice. Like, it's nicely designed and it's organized well. There's like a bunch of different rooms. There's a nice cafe that has like food and coffee and drinks and stuff, and like several places to just like listen to the official commentary. You can go in and watch it live if there's space. And at first, actually, it seemed a little weird that they were just giving out these like 30-minute time slots to actually see the game. But when you're in there, you know, it's like you can't check your phone. You just have to watch the game nonstop. So, like, you don't really want to be in there for more than 30 minutes. You want to get up, take a break, and then they usually let you come back in later if you're interested in having another go. So I feel like the design really works. It's just that if it gets really, really crowded, then it's tough for everyone. But as long as people kind of, like, keep moving around the different stations, then I think it kind of works well.
Okay. And do you think a bigger venue would have been better?
I think it certainly like would have been preferable. There's clearly the interest, you know, of a lot of people to justify a bigger venue. But then maybe they, you know, there are obviously like 1,000 things you have to consider when choosing something. So maybe there are other like issues with a bigger place, you know, like, I don't know, the security is not the same, or the Wi-Fi is different, or, you know, any number of things.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm sure the fact that it's in, like, the last two have been in these large population centers, New York and London. I imagine that makes it a little more cost prohibitive to find a larger venue, and it's a sort of a speculative venture. I mean, if you have empty seats, that's not a good outcome. So
yeah, I mean, I should say it's also just like in a great location. Like, it's near the center of London. There's tons of stuff around. It's like easy to get to. So I think we should be a little grateful that it's not like in the middle of nowhere, basically.
Yeah, that's a good point. And dare I ask if you guys, I mean, you know, no one in US chess is too many degrees separated from Fabi, and I know that you guys at minimum have some friends in common. So have you had any contact with Fabi or his team during the match?
I mean, during the match, the only person who I saw briefly was Christian Carrilla, who's been at the playing venue most days. I think usually he hangs out in the VIP area. But Yeah, the World Championship match, it's much different from these other big events like Singfield Cup or the St. Louis Blitz and Rapid, where you can get like autographs from players after the game, or you can kind of interact with the players later. It seems like they're both kind of in their own zone, and they're not interacting with too many outsiders.
Yeah, I can't blame them for that. I mean, it's obviously so much on their shoulders. And I was wondering, when you're at the match, especially as it goes on, do you guys feel like an increased sense of tension amongst the fans even? Or is it still just enjoying the spectacle?
Yeah, there definitely seems to be increasing tension with every game because, I wasn't here for the first game, but I'm sure that was really exciting. But after like a couple of draws, I feel like, yeah, it just always builds as people are like, well, you know, something has to happen at some point. So the more it doesn't happen, the more we kind of anticipate it.
Yeah, and there's always a possibility, like the more draws there are, less room there is for error. And I mean, there could very well be 11 draws. And if Fabiano like sneaks one victory in the last game, he's new world champion. So certainly there's, you can feel it. Like there's a lot of tension, especially amongst the players, but also amongst the fans. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's fun to watch. I mean, I get a little nervous just watching, and I don't even have a like totally clear rooting interest, but it just, the stakes feel so enormous. So is this, one thing I couldn't remember is, is this the first world championship for both of you guys?
This is actually the second one for me. I was in New York in 2016, just for a couple of days. It worked out well to visit a friend for a few days in New York and stop by the championship. But this is the first one that I'm here for pretty much the full duration of the match.
Yeah, and this is the first one that I've been in attending live.
Excellent. First of many, hopefully.
Yeah.
Eric, so how would you compare the two? How would you compare being at the match between these two matches?
I would say it's similar. I think New York had more of a social component for the fans. Like there was more space to actually like play people. There were like more free play areas like during the games to kind of meet and play, and they had a giant chess pieces outside of the venue in New York, so people were always like playing on the set in the streets, which drew a lot of attention. But I would say it's pretty similar. I mean, the fact that they're playing behind this like soundproof glass barrier, and the whole kind of setup where there's different areas to kind of enjoy the match between the cafe area and the free play area and the media room. So it's similar in a lot of ways, but clearly it seems like the culture between New York and London is, of course, very different.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you're probably more familiar with the New York culture, I would imagine. So what's noticeably different in London?
It just seems like a much more diverse crowd. Like you get a lot of Europeans, a lot of people from the U.S., a lot of people from right here in London. I've had the fortune of meeting a lot of just random people. Like when I walk through the venue, pretty much every day someone will recognize me from my online content, which is pretty cool. Like the very first day I arrived, I was trying to find like the name of the street to catch an Uber, and I asked some random pedestrian, and he didn't know the name of the street, but he recognized me.
That's great. That's hilarious.
So it's really cool to just meet a large variety of people and already have like the chess connection. And I've been, of course, for myself, I've been meeting a lot of like big names in the chess world. I've been trying to take selfies with any like notable chess figure. Had a selfie with Hao Yifan a few days ago. Met David Yada for the first time. I met Fiona and Astena, who are both pretty notable streamers. So, I mean, the number of people who are here who have a big name in the chess community is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I can imagine. And hopefully you guys either get to share a few meals together or drinks once your work is finally done.
Yeah, there's a couple of meetups coming up. We're actually going to this Chessable meetup tonight. And then there's a meetup for leechess.org in a few days. So I'll be going to both of those. Very much looking forward to having some social aspect outside of the match.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. And why don't you tell our listeners, because I didn't, we had David Cramley on Perpetual Chess a couple weeks ago, and he mentioned the meetup, but I didn't get the memo about the sort of hook of the Blitz tournament they're doing. So could you tell our listeners briefly what's happening there?
Yeah, so this is just what we read briefly online, so maybe they changed it or they might change it still. But I think the initial premise was that everyone was going to show up and register as either Team Carlsen or Team Caruana, like based on who you're rooting for. And then they give you a mask of that player before this big Blitz tournament. So the idea is it's going to be like a huge team Blitz event. And you also have no idea who you're playing against because we're just going to be seeing each other's masks. So that sounds really cool. There's supposed to be a couple of Grandmasters coming, a bunch of IMs. I'm sure a lot of strong Blitz players. So it'll be a pretty exciting event. We're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it sounds super fun. Okay, guys, I think I think you guys have done your jobs. I mean, graciously shared what it's like to be there, and we've dissected the games a little bit. Is there anything else you guys would like to share with our listeners, or are we done here?
I mean, I'll just put a plug for our social media accounts, because both of us will be tweeting pretty regularly. Of course, I'm taking over US Chess Twitter and Instagram, which is probably the best place to see the photos. And I'm tweeting a bit from my personal Twitter, too, which I'm sure people can find without too much trouble.
Yeah, like all the places that there are to follow the match, I feel like Twitter is just the best because you'll get the highlights from like what happens in St. Louis, what happens on like Chess 24 from the official one. So yeah, Twitter is just the place to be to watch.
Yeah,
the
I agree. And with so many amazing announcers, it's incredible. I mean, unfortunately I'm not at my computer watching all that much, but like the other day I was not going to win any Parent of the Year awards for this, but I was playing with my kids in the basement and I check out Twitter and I saw that Vishy Anand was coming on the US Chess broadcast. So I grab my headphones and turn on, plug in the interview while I'm sitting there playing Train. Like, I mean, and Grishik himself is, appointment viewing basically. So, and not to mention just sort of the actual match and the tension of the game. So yeah, I agree. It's the place to be, and you guys are doing a great job. Coaster, your write-ups have been great. Eric, mm-hmm. I already mentioned, you got Eric, hopefully we'll get you back on as a proper guest soon. And then you're going to, teach us all your Twitter secrets. Cause you're very good on the Twitter takeovers for US Chess.
Oh, well, thanks. I will say there was a US Chess article, kind of a Q&A with me and Jen Shahadi about what makes a good chess tweet. So I'm sure people can find that if they scroll down far enough on my Twitter feed.
Okay, cool. And yeah, and I'll link to both of your guys' YouTube channels and Twitter in this little description. And thanks again, guys. I know that you don't get that much rest time, so I really appreciate you guys helping out and, giving our listeners some perspective on something that I'm sure everyone listening wishes they could experience.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ben.
Our pleasure.
All right, guys, have fun tonight.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. That includes my esteemed producer, Matthew Passy, and Geert Vandervelt for supplying the intro music, and everyone who's put in a good word for the show, whether it be on a podcast platform like Apple Podcasts or telling a friend or anything like that. As you guys know, I spend a lot of time on the show, probably about 5 hours a week between the research and the booking guests and the social media and the actual interview. I love doing it, but it can be hard to find the time. Which brings me to the financial support. I want to give special thanks to those who contribute to the show. Extra special thanks to Chessable.com for their generous support. And I also want to thank, as always, my Patreon and PayPal Perpetual partners. You are Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adam Vrancourge, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, Ali Morshetti, Andres Quizdwa, Brian Mullis, Carl LeBond, I am Carlos Perdomo of ChessAtlanta.com, Bill Moran, Chad Hilton, Chad Oliver, Chris Balcom, Chris Flanagan, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Chabrie, Chris Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, a.k.a. Chess Explained, Coach Jay's Chess Academy, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Lucas, Daniel Naylor, Daniel D. Schaefer, Daniel Vine, David Cramley, CEO of Chessable.com, Dwayne Edmonds, Ethan Smith, I am Alec Donnie Ariel, Frank Tortoris, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Geert Vandervelt, I am Greg Shahadi, Harish Srinivasan, GM Jakob Augard of Quality Chess Publishing, James Bonastia, Jason Woolham, Jennifer Valens of OffTheRook.com, Jeffrey Martello, John Fernandez, John Hartman, John Jernigan, WGM Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Jerry Wells, John Thompson, Johnny McMenamin, WGM Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, I am Kostya Kovutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Laura Belyavsky, Leah Delgado, Lorraine Dore, Lucio Casada Silva, Matthew Passy, Macaulay Peterson, Martin Habish, Matthew Tedesco, Nate Solin, Nathan Webster, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Swaney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Rob Lazorchek, Robert Steiner, Ryan Berg, Ryan Sohn, Steiner Lima, Stuart Katz, WGM Tatya Vabrahamian, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tchenko, Tim Brennan, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Todd Bryant, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Victor Vrinkulj, Zhao Cheng, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks a lot, everyone. Catch you guys next week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.